Time for us to get into our profile interview, and as mentioned, joined in studio by Fellow of the College of Surgeons in South Africa with a special interest in breast disease. She's also served as head of the Helen Joseph Breast Cancer Clinic. She's a leading oncologist, and we're thrilled to have her in studio this morning. Professor Carol Ann Benn joins us as our profile guest. Professor, good morning.
Hi, it's a privilege as always. I'm a great fan of the show, as you know.
Yeah.
Listen and often call in.
So. It's so good to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much.
And as you say, you know, you've been quite a big listener of the show, even before I did this show, and I used to do a night show years ago with Sizwe. Have you always been, you know, a talk radio listener?
Well, I'm a great 702 fan.
Yeah.
So I listen and I like your show, and I often feel if is something hopefully I can add or stimulate conversation, because I think it's about communication and hearing what people think and believe.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. So it's really great to meet you. We are also joined in studio by one of your patients, actually.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Charlize, do you want to say hi?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Yeah. So Professor Carol Ann Benn's patient. I'm Charlize. 33 years old, obviously diagnosed with triple negative cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I couldn't have asked for a better professor overseeing my treatment.
Yeah. When we speak about triple negative cancer, I've never heard that phrase. Yeah. What does that mean, Prof?
So I think what we need to know is the first thing about cancer is it's neither ageist, okay, sexist, men get it. And it happens to anybody across all spectrums. So we often don't think it's going to happen to younger people.
Mm.
That when we look at breast cancers, we divide them into four personality types. So I know you've got a psychologist on next. And it's really, we no longer look at what the stage of the cancer is, but how the cancer behaves. And it's a bit like saying TB, malaria, bacteria, fungus. You would treat them all differently. Same thing with breast cancers. And we divide them into four groups. And one of the groups has a colloquial term called triple negative.
Mm-hmm.
So most breast cancer cells, they have receptors on them for estrogen and progesterone, and some of them have a gene inside the cell called a HER2 oncogene. Triple negatives have none of these, so they're not estrogen progesterone sensitive, and they don't have the oncogene. They do have other markers. All cells talk to one another with markers. So triple negatives is a type of cancer. It's often a missed cancer diagnosis because they don't look like cancers, and it's very, very important if someone has a breast problem that they have proper tests done and not just go and see a surgeon to cut something out, because these are one of the cancers that we see more commonly in younger people, and they mimic non-cancerous lumps, and people go to a general surgeon who cuts it out, and then oops, and it's the one cancer you never want to start by cutting. You want to start by using clever medicines, melt it away completely, and then do a small breast saving operation.
You mentioned, Doctor, that cancer isn't discriminatory in the sense that it is, you know, it happens to men and women, young and old. And for many of us, there is this idea that cancer happens to older people.
Absolutely.
And I guess when you're younger as well, you have the arrogance of youth where you think, oh, I'll be fine. It's okay. I don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
And Charlize, you were saying you were 33. You are 33. When
were
you?
I was diagnosed at 32.
Sure.
Yeah.
And is that, you know, pretty, not normal, but that is possible.
Absolutely. So in the last week, I've seen somebody with a cancer 23, 21, 25, 29, 92. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, absolutely. As we get older, our cells, when they divide, okay, they get little abnormalities on their little DNA, and they auto-correct themselves. When they can't, the environment around the cells, to use, you've just had wildlife on, so the little hyena cells, the defense mechanism cells, are supposed to kill it. And they either can or can't. If they don't recognize it as an abnormal cell, it grows into its own little cancer plant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how cancers develop. And then you want to use treatments to either help the natural defense mechanisms or other treatments to kill the cancer cells.
Mm. Charlize, how long did it take you to get diagnosed? Because Dr. Prof is just saying, often because with triple negative cancer, it can be quite difficult to diagnose it, particularly if you haven't gone to a specialist. It can look like something else. How long did it take for you to get a diagnosis, a proper diagnosis?
I think that's a pretty scary question. I found a lump initially, and you know, the last thing you think of is cancer. Mm-hmm. But the longer I left it, the bigger it grew. So from my side, it took me about 4 weeks to go to a doctor. But as soon as I went, I think it was a matter of 3 weeks and we knew exactly what was happening and what type of cancer it was. And I saw Professor immediately.
Yeah. And so, again, you know, Charlie's saying she waited 4 weeks. Sometimes people wait longer than that.
100%. So Charlie's has a family history. Her mom had breast cancer. So I sometimes think if you've got cancer in your family, you're more attuned to the fact that it can happen. Mm. Often people don't think it can happen to them because they don't have risk factors. So 65% of people who are diagnosed with cancer have no risk factors.
Sure.
So you assume it's not a cancer lump. So I saw a lady yesterday who was diagnosed 4 months after her baby, and she was told repeatedly that it's related to breastfeeding and not related to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to take responsibility for our bodies. We need to push the medical fraternity to do the right investigations. So what we must do is, if you are told it's nothing or this, it's not likely. So firstly, we don't have eyes on our fingers. So anyone who examines a breast and tells you it's nothing, you need the right investigations. You need an ultrasound if you're young, or you need a mammogram and ultrasound. And there's some cancers that hide quite on mammograms and ultrasounds. So again, if you get things reviewed, you get a multidisciplinary check on it. We always bring things to a specialist radiology meeting where we review every single radiology that comes from anywhere to have a look and see if it fits. So I saw another lady yesterday who they'd done two biopsies and missed the lump. So sure. Don't rush in, work out the costs, go for second opinions, your body, not the doctor's.
Mm-hmm. I think for many people with health in general, there is a bit of a fear of, well, what if it's bad?
Yes.
And I think for many people, cancer is very, very misunderstood or little understood.
Yeah.
So I think some people might also just want to avoid it because, yeah. Well, what if it's bad?
Yes.
And what is the prognosis? I know it will differ from person to person once you are diagnosed, because I think for some people there's this fear that, oh, once I have cancer, you know, there might be no treatment or alternative to assist me.
So I often see that where people leave things because they think, oh, if I've got cancer, it's okay, I'm just going to go to bed at night and die. It doesn't work like that. So you want to screen, check your body, know your body, the big five that you screen for, like we talk about the big five in the game park.
Mm-hmm.
You breast, cervical, gynae, woman, okay, prostate, men, which would be the equal, stomach and colon, and skin, melanoma, okay. So really those are the big five. So you want to be able to check and go for your screening. And again, if you find anything that you're concerned about, rather go, because if you pick things up early, you can do something about it. So there's so many amazing breakthroughs in oncology that we can manage things. There's also so many misnomers. I call it about ghost busting. So you hear things. It was a bit like COVID and social media, you know. You're so scared of the what ifs that you don't do anything about it.
Mm.
If you know, you can see what your options are. And today we have de-escalated so much around oncology treatment that we personalize it. There's almost no one who should have their breast off. This concept where people come and see me and someone decided to take both their breasts off, nonsense.
Okay.
You do less is more, smaller treatments. We want to understand the cell, give treatments to manage it. And a bit like you take your blood pressure medicine, your cholesterol medicines, you can manage the side effects if you understand. And we can tailor make it for each person. So Charlie's was really fortunate and she really pushed for. So she had a new class of treatment, immunotherapies. And her cancer has disappeared completely. She's going to have a breast-saving operation on Wednesday. And the nice thing about it is because she pushed to go and seek help and get the right treatment. So we must do that. And the more we do that, the more we will have people having access to better healthcare, better treatment opportunities.
Are these treatments widely available, readily no. available? So if I were to go to, you know, a public health facility, no. would they be an no. option for me?
So I have a long history of over 35 years of working in government unit, and I had a non-glorious exit, as everyone well knows, from Hill and Joseph. Fortunately, I'm now able to manage people without access to care in the private environment. But no, they're not. And we need to push for it, because for me, healthcare is a human rights issue. Mm. And we need to make sure the more we push, okay, the more we will allow people to have access to care. So I mentioned my clinic up in Tinswala, where people walk 8 hours to come and see me.
Sure.
And when I first started doing it, there were 20 people. Now you see 60 people on a Thursday, and that's the right thing. You know, healthcare access shouldn't be expensive, and we should avoid what I call hostile hospital environments. And that means that people in the community must push for the right to good care. Yeah. Big thing.
And so if you are someone who then needs care in the public sector, is it then, because you were saying one of your, you know, if you see someone and they've had a mastectomy, that's often necessary. Would that have been likely have happened in the public sector? Or does it happen just
as... It happens across the board.
Private as well.
Private, I mean, you think the doctors get paid more to take a breast off than to take out a lump. So I think people must push for right care. Then there's the other concept, is there's poor access to radiation in government and people, so take your breast off and avoid radiation. You can't do that. So when you look at cancer care, there's this concept I call called the umbrella of care. You can't take a breast off and avoid chemotherapy or immunotherapy or hormone treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the cell. So anyone with an awake cancer is going to require some form of oncology care. So you can't, if there's a cancer in the gland, you can't take your breast off and avoid radiation treatment. Today, though, we have access to single-dose radiation in theatre. You know, you don't even need to operate on some cancers. We can freeze them.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. So I told you I did a quick round the world in a week, and in Milan, a lot of it was on presenting on freezing cancers. So little old ladies with small, well-behaved cancers, you can give them a hormone block, and then you can freeze the cancer and avoid an operation.
As in freeze the cancer
as
in the body?
Cryo.
And
yeah.
And then it doesn't multiply?
Under ultrasound guidance, and not even an operation.
Oh,
I know. There are changes happening all the time. So part of my trips and talks and info are, as we're getting better at killing cancer cells, we may need to operate less and less.
Mm-hmm.
So for some cancers like lymphomas, when I trained as a registrar, we used to do staging laparotomies and take out spleens and big things. Now you don't even operate. So it's possible that there's a subset of cancers we may not need to operate on. At one of the meetings I was at last year, one of the winning abstracts came out of, I think, out of Belgium, where they were just giving small amounts of radiation and not even operating on cancers.
And they were seeing an effect?
Absolutely. It was a winning abstract, yeah. Yeah.
So is it that we've prioritized operation because it is quick?
So I think it's because I was talking to a patient yesterday about, you know, there are two parts of medicine. There's private and public medicine. I think in public medicine, the thing about all medicine is we need to performance manage the medical fraternity. So I know part of our conversation today is multidisciplinary.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a team of different specialists, you get better performance management. And our unit is the only internationally accredited unit in the whole of Africa. And that's not done to go while the unit or while the doctors. It's to protect the patients.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that if you're going following international guidelines, the patients know that there's some navigation checkpoints to make sure that they are safe. So in the public service, we need to performance manage better service. Okay, in the private service, it must be that there's not over-service.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are millions of very good doctors out there, but doctors are people like anyone else, and everyone needs performance management, whether it's your child and what they're doing at school, or whether it's you in your work environment. That's where a team comes in, and if everyone's checking up on one another in a nice way. I always love when I sit here, your 702 little thing sits here, do the right thing, communication, sustainability, innovation. That's really what multidisciplinary is.
Mm.
So the whole concept here, accountable people, interdependence, common purpose, is really how we want to manage people with their healthcare crises.
Yeah. Do we have the, are we able to do that? Is it a numbers thing? Is it a, as in, do we have enough professionals that are able to then be part of those multidisciplinary teams? Is it a, just like a, you know, whether we want to, almost like a political will thing?
So I tell you what's interesting. Our oncology navigator, Zama, set up a whole lot of meetings so we can set up regional multidisciplinary. And the nice thing today with digital, our head of digital, the person who did our accreditation, is talking virtually at an oncology congress in Cape Town with the concept of our digital head helping set up other units similar to that. And I mean, our unit is open access. So if doctors have concerning cases, they can always present them at the meeting and get opinions and then help the patients with make choices. So we can't all know everything about everything. So the value of a team is you're learning all the time and you are also getting other opinions, which again protects patients. So my ex-fellow from Israel contacted in with me with a tricky case, and she's going to present it Tuesday in the multidisciplinary to make sure that her patient there gets an opinion of lots of doctors in the unit.
Mm. On that point about, you know, assisting patients, they themselves to be empowered to make good decisions, I received a WhatsApp message and it says, "Good morning, I'm a great fan of Dr. Carol Benn. What I like about her is she always talks about nothing has to be done immediately. Yeah. She says, go home, think about it and decide what option will be best with your doctor's help."
100%. So it's not an emergency. There's no such thing as an emergency mastectomy. In fact, if anyone tells you you need your breast off as an emergency, run away fast. If any doctor tells you, I want you to sign and do it within 2 days, also disappear. So what you want to do is you want to process it. I don't like doctor's rooms. They're a bit like headmaster's offices. You sit there and you feel like you're under and you're told you need to do this. I don't like vertical medicine. Nothing in this world today must be I'm telling you how to do things. It's a communication. Mm-hmm. And it's about time to process. When you hear the word cancer, you are frightened. Go home to your own home environment. Think about it. We've set up a lot of digital virtual post-diagnosis consultations where someone can sit in their own room at home with all their family online as a Teams meeting, and you can ask questions, less threatening environment to come to choices and decisions, and there are many options available. Mm. Okay, it's not one size fits all. That dress never fitted me.
Yeah. It was strange. It didn't fit everyone. And so, but I also think for the patient, because often when you go into any kind of medical treatment, is you are feeling like you know the least. You have the 100%. Least amount of information.
100%.
But often, especially women will tell you, especially women who've lived with endometriosis, for instance, where it takes them so long to get the right diagnosis because no one listens to them.
That is such a big bugbear for me. So I'll step aside from cancer. This concept of young girls who have severe period pain and get told, man up, go to school, take a tablet. All we are doing is we're misdiagnosing endometriosis and they're landing up with fertility issues when they're older.
Mm.
So it's about, again, finding a team and keep on asking the questions to find the answers to your problems.
Mm. I didn't realize until 2 years ago that I'd menorrhagia.
Yeah.
I just thought it was perfectly normal to bleed very heavily until a doctor said to me, that's absolutely not normal.
No.
That shouldn't be happening. But there is a lot of that where you think, or you get told, this is perfectly fine. Go home, take a Panado or, you know, sleep 100%. It off. And very seldom do you feel as a patient that I can, you know, advocate for myself.
Absolutely.
I can make a contribution.
Also collaborative medicine. The concept is one of the fastest growing fields is what I call complementary oncology. Medicine's so unattractive. I've got a youngster I want to do something on hostile hospital environments with. That you run away and you think, right, I'll just take a whole pile of vitamins. We need to work together with your traditional healer, your spiritual, your what you want. We want to have that collaborative team approach to medicine.
We received a WhatsApp voice note that's come through on 0727021702.
Dr. Carol Anne, hi Cooks as well. A family member diagnosed recently with a so-called very aggressive cancer in the leg. Started with vomiting, extreme difficulty swallowing, abdominal pains, diarrhea, incontinence, and this is a young person. Now, would it just be that it's the chemo that she's started, eating up on the GIT? Is the incontinence likely to subside? I don't know. Look, she's getting a lot of IV therapy at the moment. And so we are hopeful, but I don't know, without examining a patient, obviously, what would you think the prognosis in terms, especially with the incontinence, it's very uncomfortable. Thanks, eh?
Thank you very much for that WhatsApp voice note. Prof?
So I think it's difficult again without a diagnosis and examination. But the fact that they're talking about leg and bowel and not swallowing, etc., there's enough there to suggest that it's probably an advanced cancer. And I think usually with advanced cancers, you're going to start with oncology treatment. The important thing for this patient is we hear supportive care. So often that's not discussed with patients, who's helping out with pain management, supportive care around incontinence, managing the effects of the treatments with the effects of the cancer. And they are, you must push for navigation, speak to your oncology nurse navigator to help out with that supportive care. And oftentimes today with oncology treatment, we have really good and durable outcomes. But it depends on when people are picked up with their cancers, what type of cancer, and how they tolerate the treatments. Mm-hmm. So we wish them well. And again, ask questions and make sure you get that supportive care.
Mm. It is 28 minutes before 9 o'clock. We are halfway through our profile interview with Professor Carol Anne Benn. She joins us this morning. We're also joined in studio by one of Professor's patients, Charlize. And if you'd like to speak to the professor, you can call us on 011-883-0702. Send us your SMSs on 31702. Or send us your WhatsApp messages on 0727021702.
Morning, Googs, and to your guests. Tato here. Thanks for a jam-packed, full of information show. Jeez. I just wanted to find out from the doctor, when she was in the Philippines, did she by any chance encounter a Dr. Aldine Bassa? Aldine does a lot of work with breast cancer in the Philippines. And I say this proudly, because she was my senior in high school, highly intelligent and highly driven, and just seeing her post about breast cancer and the strides they're making in the Philippines, just I always beam with pride seeing it. So I'm just curious to find out if the good doctor encountered an Aldine Bassa in the Philippines. Great show, Googs. Love you. Bye.
Thank you very much, Tato. Thank you very much for your message. Prof?
I haven't been in the Philippines, but I do know the doctor because mm-hmm. I actually met up with her at one of our Vegas meetings a long time ago, and they do amazing work. I think they contacted in. We have one of our local South African actresses who did a very nice video where she actually flashed and did things around breast cancer awareness, yeah. And they actually wanted to use it there. Unfortunately, we can't because, you know, it's who has ownership on what. But, yeah, they're doing amazing work also with difficulties, and we just applaud anyone around the world who is putting it out there to make the plight of mainly women, but also men,
yeah.
But anyone with cancer better. So
yeah,
heads up. Yeah,
not related to your work, yeah. But as Anthony was giving the sport, yeah. And of yeah. course one of the yeah. results is yeah. Pirates playing yes, Golden yes. Arrows yesterday, I saw you putting up the Skull and Bones. Yes. Are you a Buccaneer?
I am.
I like you even more now. Okay, I liked you go. Before. Now I like you even more.
There we go. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I was saying to you, it's great to be a Pirates fan and, yeah. you know, give yeah. Chiefs fans a difficult time, but it's not as fun when Chiefs isn't in a good place.
I know.
They haven't been for for some time now.
Yeah, we don't want to be that braggy, but come on, guys, we need a little bit of competition.
It should be, you know, I should watch a derby and think, oh,
I know,
it can go
sitting on our seats
either way, because that's the way I feel about Mamelodi Sundowns.
Yeah,
I have immense respect for Sundowns as a team.
Yeah,
and so you never know where it's going to go. But with Chiefs, I don't know anymore. Yeah. I kind of think,
come on, guys,
you know.
Get your multidisciplinary team. Get it together.
Like, back on it. We have a number of voice notes that have come through. Let's listen to one of them.
Good morning, Dr. Ben. I was diagnosed with Paget's disease, and my breast was removed. I never had any radiation after that. My symptom at the time was just what looked like a dry nipple.
Yeah.
And so they took my breast off. And they put silicone in there.
Yeah.
The silicone sometimes pricks me.
Yeah.
And it's not a very comfortable option. So, anyway, as far as I know, I'm perfectly clear. Does a breast have to be removed for Paget's disease? And is it as rare as they said it was? Thank you from Maggie.
Thank you for that voice note, Maggie.
So that's a very nice comment. So Paget's disease is when cancers go up the breast and through and spill onto the nipple.
Mm-hmm.
So you see an ulcer change on the nipple, okay, and it's a red change and it's plaque and it's often missed. So the usual delay can be up to 18 months. And they do little punch biopsies on the nipple. All of them are HER2. They have a gene inside the cell. If they're non-invading, the previous gold standard was take the breast off because often you can't see the hiding cancers inside the breast. Today, you can take it out and do a breast saving and radiation, but we always worry about missleeping cancers that are tracking up the ducts. So Paget's is a rare form of cancer that the previous, well, in fact, probably still gold standard is to take out all the tissue because
mm-hmm.
you don't know where the cancer is coming from.
Okay.
It's often a hiding cancer. So, yeah.
And then she mentioned that the silicone that was then put in its place is pricking
Because you're taking out the breast tissue and you put prosthesis in under the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And often you can feel the little wrinkles of silicone. So today, other than inflammatory cancers, sometimes but not always for Paget's, those are about the only two times when you need to take a breast off. Okay. Most times you must do less is more, small procedures. Take out the area where the cancer is. Small procedures. You don't even need to take out all the glands. We take out on average 3 or 4 glands. We do targeted axillary samplings. The glands are the security guards. So you diagnose a cancer with a core needle biopsy, not an operation. You then take time with your decisions. It gets discussed in a multidisciplinary environment. You divide it into the 4 types of cancers. Often you start with some form of either hormonal or targeted therapy or cytotoxics, what we understand as chemo, or that with a target or an immunotherapy like Charlize had. And that is really like cutting edge because the side effects are less. And you melt down the cancer, do a small procedure, give a small amount of radiation. We genetically profile cancers as well. We put them up and we tease out their brain to work out what's the right treatment for them. Okay.
And earlier on, you were speaking about the importance of, and there was another message about the importance of the patient's involvement. And Charlize, I saw you nodding when that had come up. What was your experience with the professor and, you know, feeling and being involved in, you know, the course of your treatment?
Obviously, it's a very scary thing to be diagnosed with cancer. Like Prof mentioned, my mom passed away at the age of 49, which is very young. So, and it was imperative for me to get the best treatment out there. And when I found out about Prof Ben and her whole squad, you couldn't have asked for better because it's not just one person's opinion. It's a whole squad that is talking about your treatment and what is the best for you. And it most definitely is important to go back home and talk to your loved ones and go and understand exactly what is happening and how to process that. And yeah, taking your time to just trust the people around you and going with the flow. At the end of the day, I think that the most important thing is at this age, you know, you really want the best kind of cover or best kind of treatment. And I think Prof definitely proposed that.
So I think, remember we spoke earlier about the immune environment. So cells developing, and then why cancer cells grows is the environment around them, the microenvironment, either doesn't recognize it or there's some mistake in the communication for that immune system to kill a cancer. So Charlize pushed the concept of a breakthrough new type of treatment for triple negatives, which usually just have chemotherapy, for immunotherapies, which means you have less on the chemotherapies. So our immune system, we all know around COVID, okay, is our body's ability to kill foreign cells, okay. So sometimes these cancer cells have better disguises on them so that the immune system cannot kill them. So what the... She's had a type called an immune checkpoint inhibitor, where what it does is it uses an antibody to bind, so it recognizes, hold on, you're a cancer cell, and then your immune system is better at killing the cancer. And she pushed for that treatment, and she often used to say to me, there I sat in the chemo rooms watching these ladies going through conventional treatment, and she had the real upscale treatment that actually... We're pushing the medical aids. They will pay for on some of the plans, but not on all, okay? So we're pushing for access of this to people with this type of triple negative cancer. So she will tell you that what she's been through is not a walk in the park. I mean, no. She looks absolutely gorgeous sitting here. Sorry, other Charlize, you've got competition, okay? But what her side effects were less because she had... really like the Aston Martin of oncology treatment for her type of cancer.
Yeah. And is that treatment, if you have the means, either through medical aid or through your own means, is it now widely available? If you need the treatment and you want to opt for it?
Absolutely. And you must push. You must request it from your doctors, work out. Now, remember, it's for certain types of cancers, not just breast, but you want to work out, and there are many, many different fancy new treatments that are becoming available. But this is now available. So you must ask the question. You must have discussions in a big multidisciplinary environment where they're very clever oncology doctors who can say, yes, this is available. What's my access to it? We spoke outside. Charlize said she had a policy. Some people have policies around, in addition to their medical aids, should you pay that out and utilize the treatment? The more people we can get to better and less side effect and more refined treatment, more going for the direct kill of the cancer cell, so the less the blast of treatments just going to affect from a general kill anything, the better people do, the better ability we have to kill cancers. And with her type of cancer, if you kill it before you operate, the chances of it coming back is less and less as you go out, which means you have better survivals. And we are looking at people who can then contribute and work during their treatment and also survive cancer, which is really what we want to do.
Mm. Let's go back to some of the WhatsApp voice notes that we have received.
Morning. Just found a conversation about cancer and the medal. I wanted to find out, what is the difference between cancer, non-cancerous growth, as well as fibroids? Like, I really don't understand what the difference is. Someone would be misdiagnosed only to find out it's non-cancerous growth or fibroids in the uterus or something. What is the difference between those, and how do they pick up whether it's real cancer or non-cancerous growth or fibroids? KK Pretoria.
Hi, Cooks. I'm driving with my son, and I got so excited when I heard Prof Ben on your show. I'm a survivor of breast cancer, and Prof Ben was my surgeon last year. I was diagnosed in 2022, and I was declared cancer-free in December last year. And I'm very excited, living a fully healthy life, and back to everything full, everything that I used to do. And I'm just so excited. And I just want to say to Prof Ben, please continue doing the good work. You've saved one life and you've saved more. And please continue. And may God bless the work of your hands. Thanks, Googs. Great show.
Thank you. That's a lovely message. So KK's question in the
great
beginning.
Great question, yeah. So there are many ways you can diagnose a cancer. Okay, the mistakes people make is doing blood tests like cancer markers and just going, is it normal, is it abnormal? So we use radiology and we use pathology. So benign growth is when normal cells are dividing to form a benign tumor. A cancerous growth means it has uncontrolled growth, and it's doing its own thing. So think of it in terms of parasites. It's going to take over and want to eventually kill your whole body. So we use different radiological investigations, and there are many different types, and we use tissue diagnosis. So it sounds like this person had a fibroid uterus, and they probably did a scan and said, oh, it looks like a cancer, let's take it out. I'm going to say to people again, do not rush into operations. Work out all the possibilities and different ways of diagnosing a problem, and then go and make sure it's discussed in a multidisciplinary environment.
Mm-hmm. And I think the most important thing that I just want to put out there is, Prof actually mentioned it to me, is you need to treat the cause and not the symptoms. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what put my mind at ease when I was diagnosed, is there's no knives involved first. Let's treat the cause first, understand the cancer, and then move on to treatment. Mm. I think that was one thing that 100%. Really helped me.
Thank you, 100%.
You mentioned also as well that, so what? One of the other things we're doing now is we're profiling cancers, we're trying to understand its genetics, there are four types of them. Is that part of, I guess, the future of, or the breakthrough, or the work we're doing now with improving cancer treatment?
100%. Do you want to understand why the cell has become abnormal? So cells are changing all the time, and why the environment around the cell is not. So I am, for my sins, busy with another PhD on looking at that microenvironment in sleeping cancer cells, of which often Paget's is one, because there are certain markers. We want to work out what's happening with the communication between the environment and the cancer cell, because if we can switch them off, we can develop vaccines, we can do less operating, and we can say to people, here's how we switch the cell off. Here's how we fix the damaged cell or kill the damaged cell, not just look at me, I'm so clever, I can cut it out. Because what they're trying to do is send little things into the bloodstream to hide, like little terrorists that wake up later.
Mm-hmm. We were asked a question about the relationship between food and cancer. Yeah. We often hear, and you'll see being reported, a particular food is carcinogenic, and I don't think many of us actually know what that means, and also that there are different types of carcinogens. So what is there a relationship? What is that relationship?
Okay, so carcinogen is something that is going to potentiate a cell change around a cancer. So the most important things you can do is exercise. Exercise decreases your cancer risk by 42%. There's even a very, very nice new field of pre- and post-cancer rehabilitation oncology exercise. So in people who exercise, who've got a cancer, after treatment, there's less chance of the cancer coming back. It's about exercise. It's about keeping your BMI under 30. There's no one thing that's going to cause a cancer. If there was, some rich person would have marketed it and we would be paying a fortune for it. Okay, it's like on the Google feeds. Okay, so it's multiple things. So you want to eat as healthy as possible. No one's perfect. Stop beating yourselves over the head for what you did wrong or the chocolate I ate in the middle of the night last night. So what you want to do is know that it's one day at a time. My April resolution is this day is the first day of the rest of my life. So if you didn't exercise yesterday and you didn't do this, you can try again today. Okay.
Yeah. A question here, final one. Someone asking, in fact, we've had quite a few people asking if they can get in touch with you. And I do know you do have your center that you work through.
My government and private patients, everyone has absolute free access to my cell and they can just WhatsApp in on me. The center sees people who are and are not on, have medical funding. I'm very fussy. So there's a free access clinic on a Thursday morning. And I think it's Breast Health Center with an RE at Gmail, I think. What I will do is just leave details with you guys in terms of contacts, but I think it's probably quite available on the internet.
Mm.
And a lot of people just WhatsApp into me. Don't mind.
They find you that way.
I have no problem with it. I think the anxiety, and you got someone talking about psychology of your emotions. But anxiety is a real thing. I'm an anxious person. So the concept, the fear of what if, we need to try and demystify and make sure that people have access to care. Okay.
You are actually at work today. You came into work in your scrubs.
I am in my scrubs. I'm
in
going
your scrubs. You have three operations today.
Yes, I do.
Jeepers. But I really appreciate you coming in on a work day and so early. Thank you so much for making time for us, Prof.
Privilege, friend for life.
Yes. Okay. No, but once always.
Absolutely.
Once always. Charlize, thank you as well for coming in this morning. And that's how we wrap up our profile interview with leading oncologist and fellow of the College of Surgeons in South Africa, Professor Carol Ann Benn.